its purpose was to create shared memories with our friends in photo albums. Mm-hmm. And now that same tool is almost being weaponized against us as a data collection tool used to then harvest data and now manipulate us based on that information.
And we're seeing this collision between the decline in human connection and the arrival of generative AI. These forces are about to collide, and something big is going to unfold, and we the collective us, have an opportunity to shape it for good.
It's grounded in values and humanity and connection. And I have watched people like become so passionate about topics that they couldn't before express. And this somehow is bringing it out in people. And they're not angry afterwards. They're grateful for disagreement. And that doesn't happen anymore. Welcome, everyone, to the AMP to 11 podcast. We have truly a one-of-a-kind, incredible episode coming your way. I am joined by the incredible Rebecca Boltzma. Rebecca, how are you doing after we just got to spend so much time together down in Nashville, Tennessee?
It was a great week. I'm glad to be back home and catching up, but it was so fun to see you, spend some time with you. We never did get to the Johnny Cash Museum, which was on our list, but we found some great barbecue places and we had a lovely fall walk all around the city. And I think it's in my top three at this point. Great city. And it's always great to see you in person instead of as a floating head on our podcast, Brad.
Same here, and definitely gives us a reason to have to get back to Nashville, right? We spent a lot of time with that barbecue. Next time, Johnny Cash and a little more honky tonk. But we are so excited that we came back to, I'm back in New York, Rebecca's back in Canada, and we are here with three incredible guests today. We have three members of the Rhythm Project. We are joined by Michelle Culver, Boomy, and Chira. How are you all doing today?
Good. Thrilled to be here.
Yeah, really excited.
All right. Well, we are going to dig in and do a very special version of the AMP 211 podcast. And that's why we have so many amazing guests joining us today. More on that in just a moment. But I'd love to start off, as always, by just introducing these incredible guests and letting them share in their own words their passion, their purpose, and how they got to this AMP 211 podcast recording today. So first, Boomy, could you please share with our millions of listeners around the world who you are and what you're all about?
Yes, of course. Thank you, Brett. My name is Boomy Akarakiri, and as Brett mentioned, I am with the Rhythm Project as a fellow. We do some amazing work around social interactions and AI and that intersection. Outside of my work with the Rhythm Project, I am the Research and Policy Director for the Young People's Alliance, or YPA. We are a youth-led youth advocacy organization trying to ensure that young people can achieve their American dream and make sure that their voices are heard through policy outcomes. So in my work, I am able to advocate around three main platforms, which are on economic opportunity, affordability, and building stronger communities, which is what led me to the Rhythm Project, but also to you, Brett, as we met a few months ago now in Western Pennsylvania for a superintendent's conference about AI. So thank you so much for having me here. I'm looking forward to our conversations.
Absolutely. And the only takeaway I'll let our listeners know is I think everyone at the table was both equally impressed by Boomy and Chira at how much they had accomplished at their young age in relativity to us, and how we all realized how inadequate we were in comparison to them at that age, because they are changing the world. Chira, if you could please share with the world your passion, your purpose, your why.
Of course. Thank you, Brett. Hi, I'm Chira. I'm also a Youth AI and Human Connection Fellow at the Rhythm Project, and I'm also a research lead at Center for Youth and AI, which is a youth-led organization where we look at how AI affects youth and their perspectives. So my why, or how I started to get into this work, is I started as someone who played with kind of machine learning models for fun, building things like recognizing sign language and things like that. And then when I see that large language models are starting to become more and more popular, there were a lot of effects that I see in my community, especially in young people. However, in the engineering spheres that I was in, I didn't hear any conversation about how this is affecting young people, how this is affecting the social aspect. A lot of it is more in terms of productivity and work. And so when I heard about Center for Youth and AI, who's looking to showcase these kind of perspective, I had the amazing opportunity to join. And that's how I got connected with the Rhythm Project, because they're dealing with the social connection aspect, which at that time, or maybe even now, it's something very overlooked. So super, super excited. And then same as Bomi, I got to meet Brett, which was lovely, in the Western Pennsylvania AI Summit. So yeah, super excited to be here as well.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. And Michelle Culver, if you could please also share your passion, your purpose, and why with everyone listening today.
Hi, everyone. I'm Michelle. I lead the Rhythm Project. And as you can tell, Rhythm is spelled like an algorithm, R-I-T-H-M. And it's intended to signal that we do have agency in our relationship with technology. And we want that to be alongside the heartbeat of humanity. And that, well, I should say I come to this work as an educator. So I started my career teaching in Compton in the late 90s, early 2000s. I would say a couple of years ago, I had the I was lucky enough to lead the Reinvention Lab at Teach for America. And it was in that position that I was working with incredible folks like Youssef and Mike Yates, who were at the forefront of AI as it was really exploding around us. And part of what I started to observe very quickly is that in education, you know, all of the conversation about AI, at least at the time, and still to Chira's point too often, is about how AI is going to change the way we work and teach and learn, all of which I care about and remain committed to. But there was that lagging or that nagging feeling that made me think, well, but where's the conversation about how AI is going to change the way we relate to each other as humans? And so we sure missed the mark on that 20 years ago with the arrival of the smartphone and social media. And our schools are racing to play catch up now. So we just kept thinking, you know, we are at a moment where young people are telling us they are lonelier and more disconnected than ever before. And we're seeing this collision between the decline in human connection and the arrival of generative AI. These forces are about to collide and something big is going to unfold. And we the collective us, have an opportunity to shape it for good. So that's the spirit of our work and why I'm so glad to be in relationship with you all.
Oh, that's incredible. Thank you all for sharing how we all got to this incredible podcast recording and what we're about to do shortly will reveal. And Serena, our incredible producer of the Amp to 11 podcast, is joining us. You're getting to see her. You're going to get to hear from her. Serena, can you tell everyone a little bit about your background and the work you lead as producer and anything else you want to tell our audience today?
Okay, so Brett's given away the punchline here. I am the producer of Amp to 11, and I get to meet these amazing people backstage of our podcast, and I get to speak to lots of different people about AI, about their journeys, and I get to be part of this story and behind the scenes a lot of the time. I started in a tech world. I used to build applications and was very heavily into development scenes, and a few years ago I decided to start this as my business, producing podcasts and elevating people's voices for the better across different industries, especially at tech. So this is my why and my passion now.
Rebecca, anything you want to share with the audience coming out of Nashville or just thoughts about today?
Looking forward to it. A lot of the work I do, like as an AI ethicist, is very human-centered. And I do a lot in K-12 and with youth and with educators. So I think this will be really enhance and make me think more deeply about the work that I do. So I'm really looking forward to this.
This morning at 3 a.m., my daughter woke me up by really wanting to hang out with my wife, her mom. But she did keep me up. So it allowed me to really reflect on how much I've gotten to engage with the Rhythm Project over the last few months, especially. And by my back of the envelope math at 3 a.m. this morning, I think by the end of next month, we will have done this live with 1,435 educators across the country, more or less, you know, here or there. Might have missed a person or added a person there. But Michelle, if you could share with everyone this incredible game that the Rhythm Project has developed called the AI Effect, that I can personally attest to, you know, thousands of educators now have told me, like, this is a great way to really talk about where we are as a society around AI and how to keep humanity at the heart of education in the age of AI.
We're going to have some fun. So here's the game. This is what it looks like. It's called the AI Effect. And it's a game to uncover how AI can strengthen human connection and when it might pull us apart. And the whole purpose of this game is to help you hone your own point of view. And we do that through conversation, where we get to surface differences in perspectives And so the beauty of this game is there is no right or wrong, because we are all as society learning our way forward with AI. And yet, as we start to get more deeper into the conversation, the act of honing your perspective about what you want to be true in your human relationships, and then thinking about how AI can be powerful in service of that, or knowing when you just want to walk away because this is, it's not actually enabling you to get closer to your aspirations. That's the kind of critical thinking and intentionality that we want to develop in both young people and all of the adults who are in relationship with them too. So this game helps us act our way into that. So in any given deck, you basically get two colored cards. I'm going to show us so we can get ourselves set up as players on this side too, and you can understand the way the game works. So you have three pink cards, and each card gives you a prompt. It says, does this support human connection? Does it erode human connection? Or does it depend? And on what? It becomes the opening for the conversation. Then in your deck, there's tons of blue cards. And each of these cards have different AI use cases. So I'm going to read a couple just to be illustrative, and then we're going to play around. So you might ask yourself, does checking in with your AI romantic partner throughout the day, does that strengthen, erode, or it depends? Preparing to have a tough conversation by practicing it first with an AI bot. Using a friend's photo to create a deep fake video as a joke. So these are illustrative. We're going to play a couple rounds, but it gives you a sense of the range already in this deck. The purpose is to have, you know, rigorous discourse. If you're one of those people who like to play to win, which turns out a lot of people like gamified winning. In fact, Eric Chan from Charter School Growth Fund said to me, I only want to play, when we were doing our prototype on V1, he said, I only want to play games where I can win. So V2 is for Eric and all of those people who like winning games. I think I know, Bumi, you like to play the winning version. if I'm channeling you from our team meeting. So we can decide as a group whether we want just to have rigorous discourse, or if we actually want to play. Let me ask you, do you always want to play a winning round or just have really rich conversation?
I'm always about conversation. And spoiler alert, like, my life motto with AI is it depends. So I have a sneaking suspicion that will be the only card I use. But I'm all about the discourse.
Okay, so we'll just do some really rich conversation. But if you get this deck and want to play to win, what you could do at the end of a round is vote to see who pushed the conversation the most. And that person would get that round point. So that's the spirit of those who are actually keeping score. But for today, we're just going to have some fun. And people who are listening can play along by asking, when we give a prompt, what do you think? And so we'll do our own version of that. And we invite your reflections in real time. So are we set up to play?
We are ready. I'm ready.
So here's what I'm going to do. Typically, if I was playing this and we were in person, I would deal out these blue cards and I would give everybody probably three cards. And then I would invite them to say, of those three cards you were dealt, which is the juiciest conversation you most want to have? And so, Shira, I'm going to start with you, actually, and invite you to share, which card do you want to play? And don't yet reveal what you think the answer is. Shira's going to read out the card, and you'll think to yourself and select which card you want to share. When you have it, hold it up so I know, but don't show us. After we do that, then we'll count down and make the reveal all together at the same time. Okay. So, Shira, which one should we start with?
Okay. So this is my card, which, if you can read, it says, preparing to have a tough conversation by practicing it first with an AI bot.
Okay.
Once more, preparing to have a tough conversation by practicing it first with an AI bot. Okay, everyone has a card?
I'm using a post-it because my deck of cards is actually in my suitcase, ready to use for Thanksgiving.
Ooh. Oh, I love that. Okay, 3, 2, 1. Oh, I love it. We have some dissent. And I just want to say, this is the best part. So when you play with teens in particular, there's a tendency to want to go to whoever speaks first or the most popular person. But here we can actually see immediately that we do actually have some differences of opinion. And even those of us who have the same cards, we might have the same card, but for different reasons. So, Shira, do you want to start by sharing us why you put support? And then we'll go to some, does anybody have erode? I can't remember. No. Okay.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Shira, get us started.
Yeah. So the reason I say support is I've met so many people, especially in middle school and high school, who shared to me how they were so scared to confront their friend or to mention things that hurt them. And because they were able to practice it with AI, that ended up giving them the confidence they need to reach out. And sometimes this reaching out is not necessarily confrontation. It's sometimes things like, oh, I think my friend is struggling, but I don't know how to word things or how to reach out without making them, you know, feel bad or feel like they're not, you know, being their full selves or something like that. And they struggle with those words. And then typically what they would do before AI was just, okay, this is too hard. Maybe not. I hope that it passes. But now, because they practice, they have this confidence to do so. And so I think that's why I'm leaning more towards support. So that's my argument for supports. Obviously, there are cases where it could also erode. But in the spirit of the game, I will go support for this one.
Great. And I'm just going to open it up. I may sort of direct us to surface differences, but open it up. Where did you offer something distinct from what you heard Shira say? So don't repeat or add on. Try to offer something different that will advance the thinking.
I put up supports because I feel as though thinking it through, even with a chatbot, is better than being reactive. So I feel as though it just gives people time and distance to actually think about really what their true message should be. So that's my support.
I have a bit of a different perspective. I think what we see a lot with youth and young adults today is this shying away from messy, complicated human conversations. And the reason they don't like to answer the phone or have in-person conversations is because they like that rehearsal space. You draft a text, you show it to your friend, how does this sound? And I think it evades the messy human conversations that need to be had in the moment that push us outside of our comfort zone. And I think that that's a really, really, having those conversations not on a timeline is important. Plus what I know about sycophancy and bias embedded in chatbots makes me worry that having those conversations ahead of time may lead you a certain direction when they should be had in real time. That's my position.
I also thought along the same lines as you, Rebecca. And just to add on to that, having those tough conversations in the moment, it helps develop your emotional regulation. It also helps develop your empathy too, because you're not responding to an AI chatbot that has tendencies to be sycophantic. You have to listen to sometimes hard realities that you don't want to hear. But I think overall, it really can help you with conflict management in general.
I found I did put it depends. And so while, again, I love that answer because everything everyone just said really resonates and is valid from their own perspective. I think the thing that I most worry about is people that have had that lived experience and have kind of developed some of that EQ that we're hearing. This is a great way to, you have a way to use as a sounding board and know like, oh, I've been in those situations. You can actually like put yourself back in those and know whether this is kind of a good sounding board or not. Whereas as Rebecca already mentioned, if it's just not a well-calibrated tool, it might actually give you really not great advice and you wouldn't know that because you haven't actually had that lived experience yet. So that's where I find the good and the bad. It can help you, but you do need to have that frame of reference sometimes for it to be most impactful and effective and safe.
Beautiful. Shira, I'm going to give you a chance to do final word. Anything that was stirred for you by listening to other people talk about this before we go to the next round?
I think one thing that was a question for me when I consider between support and it depends is whether having an imperfect sounding board that has a tendency to be sycophantic, but that pushes someone to have a conversation is better than nothing, but then that leading into the person avoiding the situation or just staying silent. I think that's my line between support and it depends. And so that's not really saying anything. I think it's just what I've been thinking when I hear love all of the different perspectives.
So good. Okay, nice round. I see, Brett, you're feeling pleased.
Follow-up was incredible. You all have your own podcast. That's way better follow-up questions than I can do. Rebecca's good at that. I'm not. That was awesome.
Bumi, let's go to you next. Which card do you want to play?
Yeah, so I'm reading off of the online version, which I think has more cards than the like physical copy. So this is one we haven't done before either, which I'm excited about. My prompt is an AI that creates a memory bank that you and your friends share and can look into for years to come. So an AI that creates a memory bank that you and your friends share and can look into for years to come.
Okay, so
When it's time to reveal, can we all put it on our heads like when we play, I forget what that game was?
Heads up.
Heads up, thank you. And I'm going to take a picture of it this time, just to let y'all know. So heads up on that heads up.
Okay. Well, you've got your card, get it ready. Serena, do you have your opinion set? Beautiful. Okay, 3, 2, 1. And then kind of lean in so we can see what you put. We've got a couple. It depends. Oh, a lot of it depends.
It might be all. Oh, Bumi, support.
Bumi, support. And Rebecca, what's yours? Support? No. Depends. Okay, Bumi, great. Well, you are going to take the lead because you are a dissenter in this and we want to hear where you're starting.
Okay, there we go. You can see. I put support as a huge sentimental person. I think there is something so wholesome about being able to look at memories, especially with your friends, core memories, core bonding moments. And I think especially with the development of technology and not even just AI, but social media in general, it's so easy to move on to the next moment. So you take a picture and then you never look at it again because there's always this next thing coming. Having a collection, almost like a digital photo album, I think that is something this generation could really benefit from, especially because of how quickly things are moving, just in terms of world developments, technology, being able to look back maybe in 50 or 20 years time and be like, oh my gosh, this is me and my friends during the COVID pandemic. Who would have thought that that would have happened? I think that's really cool.
I actually have two it depends thoughts. Number one is that when we look at the original creation of Facebook and its purpose was to create shared memories with our friends in photo albums. Mm-hmm. And now that same tool is almost being weaponized against us as a data collection tool used to then harvest data and now manipulate us based on that information. And then the second thought has to do with Snapchat. And part of the reason my college kids can't get rid of Snapchat is that it keeps all their memories with their friends. And so now they're locked into this data infrastructure emotionally. And it's almost trapped them now in a way that they can't get out of this one platform.
I would delete Snapchat purely because of the memories.
Exactly. That's what happens. It's a freemium service, right? They capitalize on the fact that now you can't get rid of it and figure out how to make money of it. That's what happened with a lot of platforms. So great concept, but there's also other ways that it can be.
I want to show my support first by saying, like, I agree completely with what Bumi's mentioning about, like, I love things where we can all look back, laugh, you know, especially in this virtual space. You might not be with them, but you can be with them. And like, it's like a collective tissue. So like that part I love. I was thinking more like if I put on my like high school principal hat again of like how it could be weaponized, like bullying, like these are your friends, but like one person could like intentionally like keep bringing up stuff from the past that like might really like do it intentionally to hurt someone. And so that would be the only thought of like, just what could be like a negative impact for people's social emotional development is like not being able to escape their past either.
See, I was really sitting on the fence between support and it depends. And my final decision came down to I really liked my youth without the mobile phones, without people knowing where I was, knowing what I was up to. I think that's a freedom that the youth today doesn't have. And I partially mourn for them because of it.
It's interesting. My thought was related to that in that I love the idea that it brings people together, period. You know, it's like that just feels like we need more things that bring us together. But I was also similarly wondering, but where does the data come from? So if you think about today's versions of photo albums, we made that link from asking permission to take a photo to now anybody basically takes photos of folks. And we made that cultural norm shift pretty quickly and not consciously. Mm. And increasingly, you know, you see things like with the AI friend where people are wearing a necklace that's always recording, and increasingly other devices will start to do similar data collection mining strategies. And it makes me wonder, to your point, Serena, like, when do you just want to be yourself without having anything captured, particularly as new ways and new developments for capturing our lived experience starts to become the norm versus the exception? So yeah, that's why kind of where I was on it depends as well.
Yeah, I was similar with Michelle. I think it depends on, for me, where does the data for this AI generated memories come from? Is it taken, let's say, from our text or from audio, or is it like a photo album where it's moments that we chose to kind of commemorate? I think a interesting thing about memory is the moments that stick to you is not necessarily the moment that takes the longest. And I don't think an AI, when selecting memories, have that context about what kind of moments are the ones that mean, you know, a lot to us and the ones that are worth remembering. And so I love the idea of like a curated photo album of like people instead of a machine doing it. Because what I see right now with like the photo albums, the ones that we personally chose are photos that looks like a regular, nothing is going on, but the story behind it is what makes the memory special. Well, like the photo album that like, you know, Apple Photo or Google Photo gives me currently is random stuff that I'm like, yeah, I don't even really remember what's going on in there. So I think that's why it depends, because it can bring people together. It can remind you maybe of memories, both positive and negative. But I think the loss of the choosing what moments you want to commemorate can impact that first. Mm-hmm. And then second, I agree so much with Michelle about if that moments capture everything, like if it takes your voice or if it takes your camera, it might show you like bad memories or memories where you embarrass yourself, and then you might think like, oh no, now I need to restrict myself or maybe not laugh as weirdly or something like that. And so yeah, I think it depends. There's a lot of possible positive ways, a lot of negative ways, depending on the product and how it's used.
Okay, I want to both mine for more thoughts and Bumi give you a final word, but I also want to get to more cards. So in this one, I'm just going to speed us to the next round just to get more content into the discussion. Okay.
Yeah.
Bumi, I know you have a final word, but I'm going to move us. So Rebecca, what's a card that you're longing to talk about? Tell us. Oh, you don't have cards. Okay. We're going to move to Brett and then let you jump in on that card first.
Brett, all right. Well, my favorite card already got taken, but I am actually curious, because this has come up recently with interviews we're doing with students across the nation. So asking AI to write a heartfelt speech for a friend's special occasion.
Read it one more time.
Absolutely. Asking AI to write a heartfelt speech for a friend's special occasion.
Great.
Can I suggest a slight tweak on our iteration? Yes.
I'll allow it.
Okay. No, it depends this round. Do you have
Ooh, to? I love it. Okay.
Ooh. Center right.
Okay.
That is such a cool way, by the way, to play it. You kind of like, you have to remove that card for certain rounds, like a special round. Okay. I'm ready.
3, 2, 1. Ah, that's good. Yep. Okay.
Grown up, support it.
Rebecca, get in there first.
I would say support, because not everybody has writing as a skill. It's not everybody's level of comfort. A lot of people don't have the words, but they may really deeply care about a friend. And for me, if it's something that you're going to be delivering, the human element of it, the delivery, the putting your heart and soul into it to communicate it, to show the person you care about them, that will be the most important part in that scenario. And I do think it's beneficial to people who would not feel comfortable doing that otherwise. It gives them a tool that they may not already have.
Who has something distinctly different? A disagreement. Make the case for the opposite. Who was the, I think, Bumi, you were the other side.
Is that yeah, right? It was Chira and I feel like, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, Chira, but I feel like I think I know what you're thinking about too. When we were in the Western PA AI Summit, we had this card, and initially it was kind of around the same sentiment in terms of it widens accessibility for people who may struggle or not be as confident in terms of their abilities. However, someone then said that they find more value in the effort, even if it's not 100% perfect, knowing that someone who might have a learning disability or someone who might not be as confident in their writing skills, they still took that time and effort to want to create this message. I think that is more powerful in itself than the actual content being 100% perfect.
If I may, I just would be interested in wondering your thoughts on, I guess it depends on what the value is. Are we trying to say, is it valuable for the person creating it or for the friend? Because I know some of the most famous speeches in history delivered by powerful presidents, they did not write. They were written by speechwriters or ghostwriters, and it didn't negate their impact. So that would be the counter to that.
I would also counter that. Say, even though you use AI to write the speech, you still had to put input and thought and flow and craft it. It's a tool. It's not the end result. If you really care about that person and that speech, then you would spend as much time crafting it in an AI model as you would if you were writing it on paper.
I wish I could have said it depends, because I think it depends on the level of tool usage that you're using. Because there are people that are writing speeches and they're like, hey, my friend's name is A, write me a speech. And then it spits out a generic and probably true speech about that person. And when they say it out, then nobody knows. But it's different when they're putting in, you know, the things that they actually value about the person in it. And what the AI does is kind of improve about the words or polish the words. So that's why I'm really on it depends. But I lean more on a road because I feel like in terms of one by one, to your point, Rebecca, in terms of impacting speeches, I think that's amazing. But I think in terms of one by one, one person saying to a specific friend, there is a lot more impact and hurtness in a terrible speech, but they mention moments and personalities that are unique to you rather than something generic but beautifully written, specifically for a one-to-one scenario here.
Okay. Let's do two speed rounds. So in these two, I'm going to offer provocative ones, and I want you to offer the most succinct and distinct ideas in response to each other. So if your instinct extends or is similar to somebody's perspective, hold it and just offer challenge. Okay, so we can get a little bit more speed round this time. So here we go. This one, using a hidden AI companion in your ear to suggest topics, questions, and responses while you're in conversation with someone. I'll read it again. Using a hidden AI companion in your ear to suggest topics, questions, and responses while you're in conversation with someone. Okay. 3, 2, 1. And hold them in close so we can see. Okay, let's start with Serena. You have support. Let's begin with you.
Well, I'm just putting in support only because I'm being completely and utterly honest. And if there was such a device, I would own it.
There is. I'll tell you all about it later.
Oh, Rebecca, tell us about it now.
Well, the Meta Ray-Ban glasses, I show them as demos in all of my keynotes, but they have headphones built into the arms, and kids use them to cheat by having their friend in the hall or a recorded thing playing in their ear, and it does perfect audio right into your ear while you're writing a test, and then also takes photos and video, right? So that would be very, very easy.
But Chira just held them up.
So mine was purely on own selfish. I would use them. I'm being honest.
Hello. Chira, let's go to you because you literally held them up next, right alongside Rebecca. Tell us what you put and why.
I put erodes because I think in conversation, what you chose to ask someone and how you respond, I feel is something that's authentic and that comes from you. I feel like when you ask a question, I assume in a way that you're curious about the thing that you're mentioning. And if it's fed into you by some sort of device, I feel that authenticity and connection is less there.
Anyone have distinct ideas that have not yet been added? And if not, I'm going to move us to another round.
Yeah, I'm going to shout out somebody me and Rebecca met down in Tennessee.
I know Carl. Exactly who you're talking about.
Carl is a mountain of a man. He wore a cowboy hat and overalls the whole time. And I got to, when we played this game in Tennessee, I walked from table to table just to listen. And Harl brought up that this question. He was like, you know, I grew up on a farm. He's like, I didn't really interact with people like all day. And he's like, my son graduated from a school with 13 students in his graduating class. So he's like, I am very socially awkward and I would love to be more engaging with people. It's just not my nature. It wasn't how I was raised. He said, so if I could know about people in advance of one of these events, I would want to talk to you about what you're excited about. And then I would feel like I'm doing good by you by like knowing what you want to talk about. And then I'd love to talk to you, but I wouldn't know what to bring up otherwise. And I wound up not talking to anybody, not meeting anyone new. So that's where my mind goes there about how it could support certain types of people.
Beautiful. Okay, let's do another round. Speed round. Thank you, guys. Here we go. Participating in a virtual AI-facilitated group therapy session. I'll read it again. Participating in a virtual AI-facilitated group therapy session. And let's take a Boomi cue. No, it depends on this one. Okay. 3, 2, 1. Yes, we have some good dissent. All right. Let's see. Brett, why don't you get us started on this one?
Sure. Okay. So I would have obviously chose it depends if we weren't playing Boomi style. But with this one, AI, it said AI facilitated. If it was AI co-facilitated, I would definitely support it. Because I think this is a great example of, you know, as we've all alluded to, it really depends on the tool and the quality of it, because that tool could lead a group of people who authentically need like expertise down the wrong pathway and misread it. Whereas if it was co-facilitated with a therapist, a licensed therapist, I would like that. That would be my ideal of group therapy in the future, because you could go back and reference things, or you can quickly create ideas that could help spark solutions.
Beautifully said. Chira, you had a disagreement. Where was your head?
In my head, the first thing that comes to my mind is those apps that we would use in groups to show you prompts. Or like, you know, like the AI card effect. These are prompts. And so I think that what comes up in my head first of being an AI facilitated group therapy session, because it is still a group. And so that's why I'm leaning more towards support.
Anyone have a distinct idea that they want to get into the mix on this round?
I just think with AI, as much as it tries to have human-like features, it can never replicate energy. And I think for something as intimate and powerful as therapy, there's like energy in the room that I don't think could be replicated with AI.
And I would just add, there's not a tool available today that I would ever trust in any therapy context with humans right now, to be totally honest, based on the research I do. So maybe in the future, but at this point, when you look at the most successful kind of group, like AA or all of these, the most successful kind of group experiences, they are very human dependent and depend on that context with other people. So that's why I put a road. For now, I reserve the right to change my mind depending on tools in the future.
Third and final speed round. Are you ready? Talking to an AI preserved version of a beloved deceased relative or ancestor. I'll read it again. Talking to an AI-preserved version of a beloved deceased relative or ancestor. Let's do no independence. Force a stance. Sorry, Serena. I know it's so hard. Got it? Okay, good. 3, 2, 1. Ah, oh, I love this. Just okay. Bumi, you got us started.
I've been thinking about this card a lot, especially because I really do love my grandparents, and it's never nice to think about the possibility of any family member or someone close to you in your life passing on. But I feel like the grieving process, it teaches you so much about yourself, and it's a way to heal the family or the your circle, essentially. And I think that would be eroded if you could just have a device that restores them back in whatever capacity. There's something so beautiful about memories and sharing that lived experiences that other people have too. So as much as it is a painful journey to go through, I think there's also beauty to it that intertwines a lot of humans, because that is a universal experience.
Mm. Bumi, I think that's beautifully said. And you're wise beyond your years. That's exactly my sentiment.
The only thing I would caveat that with is, like, during the pandemic, I reached out to a lot of my uncles, parents, and wanted to kind of like jot down history, just from maybe from a pessimistic or maybe from who were on lockdown. But I, now that AI exists, like, and I have it at my fingertips, I wish I had done that in AI for some of those reasons you just mentioned. Like, I have all these rich stories, but like, I'm frantically was typing them. So was I really present listening? No, I was trying to type to preserve it for, I don't know what. Mm. So I would have loved to have that. But the one caveat I would say is this would be a great example of, you know, I know sometimes AI tools hallucinate. I would not want an AI tool to hallucinate. So I'd love it if whoever made that would train it on, like, if you authentically, if there's not anything in that history of what the person provided of their own memories or what their relatives provided memories, that it would clearly state, like, I don't remember that. I don't recall that. So, like, it's clear that you are always getting their truth. Mm.
I totally agree, Brett. I think that it would be important to do it authentically in the context of the person. Like, I wouldn't want anyone to do that to me in a way that would rewrite my history or my stories or have me do or say things I wouldn't usually do. With that said, I would love the opportunity for my kids to be able to maybe one day interact with my parents long after they're gone, or my grandparents, and have them tell their stories, as Brett mentioned, in their own voice, with their own image. My kids fully knowing that they have grieved, or that we have grieved them being gone, but they still get the experience of getting to know them and hear their voice and hear their words from their mouth with their consent, of course.
Can I just, I just want to ask one question. So we're all talking about AI, and normally AI, I'm not going to talk about hallucinations or anything here, but it does embellish stories and fills in gaps. Not so much hallucinates, but fills in gaps. And that's what would make me uncomfortable.
With the gap. It also has a way of disproportionately doing that too, especially when it comes to marginalized communities. So when everyone was sharing their ideas, I was thinking about, one, a lot of traditional cultures pass down their history through verbal communication. And even if it's not written, there's still that richness to it. But then, because everyone's perception of, if it was like for history purpose, for example, everyone's perception of history is so different, that I'm worried if the creator develops these tools, but then it has that biases that negatively impacts certain communities.
Mm-hmm. Something really interesting, a case study just for your, you've probably heard of it. In New Zealand, there was a tribe that built their own large learning model. Specifically, they brought in all their elders and built it all on the language and the stories, strictly on their content. I'm curious about, like, the gaps or how that's worked long term, but I think for that exact reason you mentioned. So very cool.
One thing I just
Allie on our team actually talks about how
This could be an act of also reclaiming or protecting family history. And she describes, you know, having come to this country and a lot of her own history and culture being whitewashed as they assimilated into the American expectations. And if she could pull forward some of that wisdom and tradition, that she would long to do that. So she really pushed my thinking in offering that contribution in a prior conversation.
I think to me that the interesting thing I was thinking about is what is the unique thing that AI gets to offer compared to, let's say, the elders putting all of those into written or kind of like video format. This is just a random idea, but I feel like a good mix of AI and true story would be more like a retrieval, a RAG AI system. So a RAG AI system takes in parts of a document instead of creating their own words, or they can be trained to be like, hey, this is the actual quote from the person. And maybe they can explain extra, and this is what's generated. So I feel like maybe that. So AI is a tool to retrieve the information that's true to the person rather than generating a response on them. I feel like that might swap me over to support.
Agree.
Yeah. Michelle, can I say, so funnily enough, the very first time I met you was at the first time I ever used PlayLab in Hawaii with all those TFA members. And the very first tool I made was this tool. I said, I want to make a tool because my mother-in-law is from Ecuador. And I said, and I've been there, and they always tell the stories about what it was like for her growing up there and how different that is for my children right now. So I actually said, this is the person's age. This is exactly where they grew up in Cuenca, Ecuador. Like, could you describe a typical day in the life of them on a Sunday if you're like a 10-year-old in 1970? And it was so spot on to all the stories I'd heard them say. So like being, it's like some of that was really unique. And that's the first thing I would do. And then I made one about my mom growing up in Queens because she isn't here and I want my kids to know about it. And I'm like, so anyway, that part of like putting yourself back in history. But as Bumi mentioned, like, that also could have a lot of biases built in, but that idea of helping kids see like what it really was like and having perspective, if you're able to train it on all the authentic stories and how people lived from the actual ancestors.
I love this so much. I just want to pause because we could probably go on forever because these conversations are so juicy, but I just want to make a moment of gratitude and maybe just invite you for a second yourself to think about a moment where somebody else pushed your thinking, your own point of view evolved and changed as a result of this conversation, and how lucky we are to proactively take pause and say, well, what are the kind of relationships we want in our life? And then in what ways might this be in service of that? And in what ways might that erode it? Because one of the most powerful things we have is our ability to choose how we want to be in relationship, both with each other and with technology. And of course, we've also got builders on this call too. And so folks who are actually have the opportunity to design and create pro-social AI. So there's so much potential. And I just have to say, conversations like this reground me, make me delighted to be in conversation with folks who have perspectives and lived experiences that are different from my own. And it makes me long to have more human conversations where we get to feel like it's not only safe, that we're okay as a result of disagreeing, but we're made better because of our disagreements, and that in doing so, we all get better together. And so I'm just having a lot of gratitude in this moment. So I just want to maybe bring our game to a not an end, but a pause with just a moment of appreciation for you all. So thank you guys.
This has been so much fun, one, because it was such an amazing game. So again, thank you, Michelle, the Rhythm Project, for creating this. And I will attest again, having done this in multiple states, every conversation I've ever seen literally feels like this, regardless of what part of the country, the age group of the people playing, their experience or title. But it's also been awesome because me and Rebecca just get to play a game and we're not actually hosting this when you are. So in the spirit of that, because Michelle has done an amazing job being the game show host, we're going to ask one of our traditional questions, which is, me and Rebecca are in the hot seat. We're the guests on the AMP 211 podcast, and we today have two amazing co-hosts, Bumi and Chira. Could you think of a question that you'd like to ask me and Rebecca?
In every episode I do, what would you want the common thread to be that people can take away and impart into their communities?
Honestly, as we're sitting here, I'm wondering if we add a card to every single one of our episodes to generate this kind of discussion. I think this is what needs to happen. And I think it should be a tradition, because the reason I listen to podcasts is I want to hear differing views and opinions. I just don't want to hear somebody talk about the one thing that they're doing. I want to challenge my thinking. And that's what's happened for me here today. And I've appreciated it. So my answer would be I'd love to incorporate this into what we do moving forward.
Well, yes, and in my 3 a.m. fever dream email to you, Michelle, I said, you should have a weekly podcast where this is what you do. And you should bring together really diverse perspectives from around the world, different ages, everything we've said that makes this such a fun experience, and do that. Or bring, yeah, so plus 1,000 to that, if not a standalone podcast, then definitely incorporating it really everywhere you go. That would just be fun. So the rationale for that, though, is, as Rebecca said, I want people to feel. And also, I love that this, as Michelle closed this out, said, it's grounded in values and humanity and connection. And I have watched people like become so passionate about topics that they couldn't before express. And this somehow is bringing it out in people. And they're not angry afterwards. They're grateful for disagreement. And that doesn't happen anymore. So that's the part I really love about this game, and why we should be putting this in every podcast.
I also think, as I reflect on our experience today, if I would have been running all of my answers through an AI before I responded, or I was wearing Meta Ray-Bans where someone was queuing me up, or I had time to work with an AI ahead of time to vet my answers, I just don't think it would have been the same experience. So on a macro scale, it just taught me even more about the importance of that in the moment messiness of humanity and how much more valuable that is when it's not AI assisted.
Talking about perspectives, I'm curious, maybe in this month, this year, have you had any perspectives of conversation that still is stuck in your mind and that changed your opinion, maybe regarding AI or something else that you want to share?
The comment that has stuck with me that I've shared now, and like Rebecca said, like the thing that I always impart, I've probably said 5 times today on 5 different calls, is like the student in New York was so adamant once we got talking, after we were talking about like school and the impact, like coming of age in the age of AI, how much anxiety and social anxiety they live with around, well, people think I'm a phony because I'm using AI. And so this is where I want to credit Rebecca for the one who at least taught me the perspective on, like, if people think you're using AI, you lose their trust. But if you are explicit or open about how you're using AI, it can actually enhance your trust. And I'm paraphrasing, you know, Rebecca's brilliance in research. But I say that because that has stuck with me, where once we talked through, like we're doing now as humans at a table with making eye contact, I was like, well, what if the person was just having a horrible experience, but they told you, like they told the AI tool, like, please make sure my friends know, like, I love them. I'm only using this because I'm spiraling. And like tomorrow I'll call each of you, or like, let me know if you want me to call you individually, because they couldn't handle it. And then she was like, oh, if she did that, I wouldn't feel bad at all. Instead of being mad, I would have been like empathetic. So like, kids need like etiquette like that. And that has stuck with me, because then it led to that school saying, maybe we should be teaching like the social AI etiquette in addition to all the important things you need, the guidance you need to run a school around AI policy as well.
That's a good one. I would probably second some of that. That's based on a study that came out, I'd say, in the last 6 weeks. And it talked about how if people find out that you've used AI, they trust you less. It doesn't even matter if you used it in a way that the content was correct or you used it in a way that would make sense. What you need to have is legitimacy, which is people understand why you used it in the way you did, and you didn't use it in a way that they would consider to be morally inappropriate. And that's a gray moving line, right? Like, that leads to people being outraged about how dare you use AI. We've seen that happen. So it's just made me think more deeply, like as I do curriculum and we deal with different things, as to how we explain, because radical transparency isn't always the answer. It's proactively using it in ways that are human and legitimate, but that comes from having important conversations with the communities involved. I tell the story all the time, but one of the most interesting story, this is it. This is the one that stuck with me. This is my answer. When Sally Ride, the first American woman to go to space, went to space, before she left, the all the male rocket scientists around her asked her if 100 tampons would be enough for her 3-day journey into space. And that stuck with me because even though they were brilliant rocket scientists, they had no lived experience in her shoes. They couldn't relate. They didn't understand what it was like to be her or in her circumstance. And that stuck with me because I realized I can know a lot, but there's so much of lived experience I don't know. And all of those voices need to be involved in all the conversations because I know almost nothing. And I know absolutely nothing about certain perspectives. So all that to say, it just encourages more human conversation and almost less reliance on AI for those really, really important things and recognizing how little perspective we actually have. So that's one.
We are going to conclude, right? Because this is a very special episode with one of our really most important shared values that Rebecca and I have, right? Like there's so much brilliance out there and, you know, the three of you know people in the space and this is a great chance to amplify people that others need to know about their work, right? Whether it's for the person, the organization, the cause, but any of you can start. And also because there's three of you, if one of you starts going and then you, someone else goes and that gets you to think of another great person or organization, like there's no time limit to this. Well, you know, people want to, this is our favorite part. So you're going to speak great about people behind their back. And the day this episode's come out, you're going to text them and say, check this out. So who would like to start just speaking good about other people that are out there in the space that our millions of listeners need to know about?
Last week, I met Sam from, Bomi's also here from Young People's Alliance. And I just think that they're doing such amazing work in kind of AI policy. And it's just amazing the things that they're doing right now, especially in terms of AI and mental health. So I just want to shout them out. And also Bomi's here, so hey, not exactly fully behind their back, but.
And there's actually a whole handful, and you guys can help me name them, of youth-led organizations that are really trying to be proactive in on the policy front and the legislative front to say there are ways in which we can design technology that are more in service of our vision for our, how we want to be. And so I'm thinking about the coalition around Design It For Us. I'm thinking about Encode. Who else would you guys add? There's so many incredible youth-led organizations right now.
I was also going to say definitely the Young People's Alliance. Have to shout out my own organization. Shout out to Sam and Ava, Sparkle, and Alex for their amazing work. But also recentering youth voices, youth organizations in this space. So as Michelle said, there's so many. There's like AI Consensus, Innovation for Everyone, Encode. There's a bunch. And I think it's so important, especially because AI is an emerging technology industry, to really center and leverage those youth voices in this space, because young people, everyone, like older generations, like to call us the most tech savvy generation. Well, now we can actually put that to use and design and shape policy around healthy and responsible technology.
I'll add to others organizations that I see really thinking about how to keep young people safe in the midst of a lack of guardrails on this. I think the Jed Foundation is doing some really good work. I think Julia Freeland Fisher is doing a lot to better understand what is the evidence base? Like, why are young people being drawn to this technology? And what can we understand about that so that we can create healthy alternatives? And so in the spirit of raising the floor so that all young people can engage safely, those are some of my favorites. And then I just think about there's a whole other group of people who I'm also inspired by who are building pro-social AI, who are trying to figure out how to put this technology to work in ways that actually help us be even more human together. And so I think about Nitsan at Climb Higher, who's building a bot to help you practice your interview skills before getting in front of another human. Kanya at Future Coach, Tiffany at Uprooted. So all of these folks, I think, are again, trying to imagine a world where we use this technology in service of the kind of human relationships we want.
Well, I'm going to let you all buy some time here. Rebecca, name one person you want to talk good about.
Oh, there's so many. We always end up having them on the podcasts. So I think maybe Wayne Holmes is a guy who's doing great work with UNESCO, and I follow his work closely in developing kind of AI policies for K-12 education. Someone who's doing great work. There's actually somebody that I really enjoy following on LinkedIn. Her name's Dr. Rachel Wood, and she's specifically researching the work and the interaction between people and their chatbots from a relational standpoint. She's a therapist and a psychologist, I think, who's specifically looking at some of that stuff, and I find her work fascinating.
Thank you. And I've heard you say those people, and I'm glad you said it again, because now I'm going to go follow you. Any final people, speed round, anyone else you want to make sure you don't forget, so that when they hear it, they're like, but me, what about me?
Neha Shukla is doing amazing work in like AI research and reaching out in terms of AI. And I think she works with a lot of different organizations and schools as well. So she's doing amazing work. Where she go to?
Shout out to the other Rhythm Fellows as well. So Odie, Hannah, Thyra, Jose.
Well, I also just think there's another whole category of leaders right now who are independent of AI and in part with the awareness of AI. They're choosing to build places of deep belonging for young people, because I always think that we can reap the benefits of this when we are healthy and whole. And it's so much more seductive. The harms are so much more seductive when we don't have those kinds of healthy human relationships ourselves. And so, gosh, there's so many places where Valor Collegiate, Da Vinci Schools, out-of-school programming, like our leaders, E and Otis at YMCA, who are thinking about after-school programming, Live Oak, Jack Harriet, Live Oak Camp, where they're bringing, you know, young people from New Orleans across different racial and economic backgrounds to be in real relationship together during the summer camp. So I think there's a whole nother category of people who are preparing us for the arrival of generative AI by doubling down on what my beloved friend and colleague Sarah Salim talks about as the ancient technologies, that the wisdom of being together in community and how that nourishes us. And there's so many leaders who I respect and admire in that space as well.
Also, Sanvi from the Youth Power Project, Zaman at Design It For Us, those were my extras too.
That was incredible. And also, when this does come out, feel free to tag those other people when it comes out on LinkedIn and social media. Rebecca, so this is a good example of us having, we changed technology, so we weren't able to have our usual side convo on the other side. That's the magic behind it. We're just side convo to make sure it seems seamless. But Rebecca, were you able to see my alternative method of communication just now?
Yes, I did. And Brett actually wants me to take the lead and ask you, Michelle, about if people want to get their hands on these cards or learn more about the Rhythm Project, tell everybody exactly what to do, where to go, and how to make this happen, because I think we have a lot of fans.
I love that. Thank you for the invitation. We actually just got the next round produced. So we are ready. We had a long wait list for a while, and we are now ready to make them available for folks who want to play with us. And so you can just simply go to our website. And so when you're looking for it, it's The Rhythm Project, spelled again, RITHM.org. If you're typing it in, put Rhythm plus AI and we'll show up. And then there's a place on our website where you can let us know that you're interested, how many sets that you want, whether you want a single set for your dinner table or a class set for a teacher program, teacher professional development, or for your communities. So you let us know, and then we will make them available. And we do this by donation currently. So you can, if you don't have the opportunity to have the resources, we still want this conversation happening everywhere. And if you are in a place of abundance and can make that conversation available for others, you have the opportunity to do that as well. So we look forward to hearing from you, not just in reaching out about them, but also in what you learn from them and what other cards you want to add and how else we can evolve the game. Because the thing about the Rhythm Project is it is a community, and we are consistently co-creating and evolving and learning as the world changes around us. And we look to do that in partnership with all of you. So thank you.
I want to first again thank all of our amazing guests today. I want to thank Serena for always being an amazing producer, but this time also being an active participant. Rebecca for being the best podcast co-host any guy could ask for. And last week, Rebecca, Serena, and our guest pushed me to come up with a closing, right? I don't have like a signature closing. So I was like, wow, it is crazy sometimes you don't come from a place of gratitude and abundance. You're like, you have a podcast, right? We never like think about that. So it's like, well, who do I want to make sure ultimately, like, who am I doing this for? And I'm doing it, you know, for my children and my wife and my family. So I was like, so what we always say at nighttime, like almost always, you know, there are asterisks to that, right? No one's perfect, but a lot of nights, like when we leave each other's rooms, they'll be like, you're the best daddy in the world. I'm like, no, you're the best Sammy in the world. You're the best Annabelle in the world. So I'm giving that preface. I'm not going to use that in the future, but I just want to say thank you to everyone for listening to the Amp to 11 podcast. And I hope tonight and beyond, you find those special people and you make sure you tell them that they are the best people in the world. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.